The art of engaged conversation? What?
Welcome to the Joyous Expansion Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Dupree, scouring the globe to bring you stories of courage, passion, and resilience. If I could sum up this podcast into one word, I would use empathy. Now let's get inspired.
Welcome to the Joyous Expansion Podcast. I am your host once again, Brett Dupree, here to drop some spiritual, metaphorical, personal development knowledge on you. Episode 100. Today we're talking to John Knepper, who is a professional speaker and educator and is also a trombonist. But we didn't talk about that, did we? But he helps people with conversation. But first, I talk on what's going on in my life. Because if I can't be vulnerable about what's going on in my life, how can I expect my guests to be? Yes, it's a countdown towards the end. And generally speaking, 100, this would be a time for a celebration. And it is a time for a celebration. 100 episodes. That's nice, but it's not going to be a celebration like I generally try to do with my 50th, I had my friend Andy Dooley, with my 100th, since I know that this podcast is coming to an end and I'm trying to just get out the interviews that I do have. I just will leave my end celebration to episode 109, and that's how I will celebrate the end and everything I learned from doing the Joyous Expansion podcast. And we will be back in some form in the future. I mean, I'm still going to do the Church of Awesome podcast, even though I haven't done it in a while. But I do have an idea, and I think I'm relatively excited, but I still have the problem of motivation. I am having a midlife crisis. That's what's going on in my life. Everything feels meaningless. I feel like a failure. I'm 42. This is what I accomplished in my life. And do I actually want to go forward? That is really hitting me hard. Very hard. It's annoying. I hate it. I talked to my therapist about it. And that's when I told her about the idea and just thinking about it. Because I remember not that long ago where I was thinking to myself that if I was 53, 60, looking back at my life and not making it as a professional development guru, podcast host, or whatever, somehow I'm taking my love for growth and putting it out there, not being able to make money at it, to be able to look back and think, yes, I tried. Yes, I did it. Yes, I fulfilled my purpose. But then the pandemic happened, and the pandemic did something I didn't expect. It gave me, number one, a lot of time to think. Number two, I started to notice there's a lot of problems with personal growth and personal development. And then there's people like Jordan Peterson and Catherine Northrup and the pandemic and how that really took off and QAnon. That really made me look at what I was doing, because a lot of things I focused on and a lot of things I taught really able to use and go down a dark path. And that just made me wonder the question, do I actually want to do this? And then they asked me the question, well, then what do I want to do? And the fact that I am taking this seriously, by this seriously, I mean the pandemic, even though I have been vaccinated, I got vaccinated back in December due to my full-time job. I still stay home most of the time, and on days where I don't go out, where the days I don't visit my fiance, it is hard for me to do anything. And I mean anything. Like, it's hard to pick a TV show to watch. It's just, the choices seem all pointless, and it's some sort of, I think it's a form of depression, definitely. Mostly because I notice a distinct difference after I had my coffee cacao powder drink. Yeah. My morning, I drink coffee, cacao powder, turmeric, ginger, cinnamon, a little bit of black pepper, hemp hearts, chia seeds. I call it my health elixir. And I can tell you, my day goes so much better when I drink that. I think it's the endorphins from the cacao for sure, because cacao does help. And I think the coffee with the stimulant. Like, I feel much better today than I did yesterday, and I don't think I drank it yesterday or Saturday. So on the weekends, I really need to drink it. But then again, it's hard for me to do that because I don't have a reason to, because I'm not doing anything that day. It's just days where I don't have any goal. It's hard for me to function in a way. Days where I go see my fiance, I have a great time. I can get up and everything's fine. But it's just days where I don't have goals. It's just hard to make one right now because I just feel purposeless. And that is not fun. But that is just what's going on in my life right now. And so I'll try to get this podcast out. That'll make me feel better about myself. So at least I did something. It's been a while. But I'll get these out. Hopefully by June I should get all of the rest out. All right. So this interview is with John Knepper. John Knepper has been a professional speaker and professional educator for over 37 years. He's also a storyteller and a trombonist. John is the go-to person when you want to create deeper and more meaningful relationships, both professionally and personally. He is the creator of the popular programs like The Art of the Engaged Conversation and Creating Peak Experiences and Beyond. Selected as Middle Level Teacher of the Year in Kenosha, Wisconsin Unified School District, and winner of the Herb Cole Educational Fellowship Award for the state of Wisconsin. John has spoken to professional educators at colleges and universities and for businesses, churches, and professional associations and organizations. John works with leaders to create a more trusting and connecting environment in their organizations that encourage, acknowledge, and validate employees and members for the contributions that they make to the organization. Now, here is my interview with John Knepper. Hello, John, and welcome to my podcast.
Hi, Brett. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you on. Can you give the audience a brief introduction to who you are?
I am the Trust and Connection Maximizer. I'm very passionate about the work I do. I create higher levels of trust and connection through meaningful conversation. Because many times over my life, I'm really passionate about that because I felt like I wasn't being heard. I've created a program called The Art of Engaged Conversation to help people feel like they're being heard and feel validated. Been a professional educator and a professional speaker for over 37 years. I'm also a musician, a trombonist, and I like to tell stories.
Awesome. So when it comes to not feeling heard, this come from your family situation growing up?
You know, Brett, I think it came from a lot of things. I think in some ways I did feel very heard in my family. It was a lot of times in other social interactions where people would talk and talk and talk, and then 1 minute before it was time for us to leave, they'd say, oh, and how are you? I'm like, I'm fine. Thanks for asking. Because it was really conversations that were all about them. And it took going through some things. I went through a weekend experience. New Warrior is a men's weekend retreat. And I was dealing with stuff. I was dealing with some anger and hurt and sadness about feeling that as an adult from when my parents divorced when I was a kid. And the cool thing about New Warrior is they created this great safe place to get through all that and come out feeling free on the other end. That was a pretty extraordinary experience.
At what age were your parents divorced and how did that affect you?
I was 12. I remember the day that my dad left was pretty extraordinary. We were having a MD carnival, muscular dystrophy carnival, out in the yard. And we would go out in the yard and do the carnival and then run back in and see my dad with his suitcases packed. And I remember at one point he was trying to make it easier for us. And he said, I don't love you, I hate you. And it's so interesting because I think I was 11, maybe 12. And I knew that my dad didn't mean that. I mean, I remember that so clearly. I remember that day. But in my 12-year-old self, I made a decision that I wasn't going to be that. I wasn't going to have a marriage that fell apart and broke up. And the truth is, I stayed in my marriage a long time because I had made that decision as a 12-year-old. You know, in retrospect, I don't know if it was detrimental to my kids. I mean, I have a really great relationship with my kids, but I didn't have a great marriage, and I stayed in it far longer than I should have.
That's one thing that interests me about personal growth and learning about is how many decisions, hard life decisions we make at such a young age.
It's incredible the kind of decisions we make. And I think, like I say, could I have told you as my 12-year-old self that I had decided that? No, but I look back on that. And clearly that was a decision I had made somewhere in at a deep level in myself. Things like, this is not quite so deep as that, but deciding to play trombone because one of the eighth grade players on my dad's basketball team was a trombone player. I went, oh, that's why I want to play trombone. And like I say, not as deep, but still those kinds of subconscious things that lead us to decisions that we make.
I'm actually curious, did you ever have a conversation with your dad later on of how he came up with that decision to say he didn't love you and didn't like you?
No, we didn't ever talk about that specifically. We did talk a lot about how the divorce was difficult, how I thought it was interesting too, Brett, because he and my mom both thought that the divorce was hardest on me. And in my thinking, I thought I had handled it pretty well. I thought I had navigated through my life pretty well and things were going okay. I had a good job. I graduated from college. But the truth is, when I went to that men's retreat, I had to deal with some of that anger and some of that hurt from 20 years prior to that. So my dad and I talked about it, and my mom and I talked about it too. Yeah, we did.
So I'm curious, what got you to wanting to go to that retreat?
I had a four-year-old daughter, and was she four? No, I take that back. She was about 3 and a half, and was trying to be a good parent, was having feelings of just knowing something wasn't right. Something wasn't good in my life, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And it's like sometimes, you know, they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And all of a sudden, I saw this advertisement for this new warrior weekend. And it's one of those things I went, I need to do that. And I was just so convinced that when I contacted them, they said, well, we can sign you up for the October event. And I felt like I needed to go so badly. I wrote back and said, if you have any openings, can you get me in sooner? And they bumped me up a month, which is great because I really felt like I needed it at the time.
Awesome. The thing that felt like the revelation in your life was about feeling heard and seen is what it sounds like, what you got from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it was also about one of the things about feeling heard and seen is being able, what I think is to be able to express how I feel. And I wasn't able to do that very well. And I know that this is kind of a generalization, but I know men in general struggle with that. And I was struggling. I couldn't really say how I was feeling about things, especially in terms of expressing anger. I had a lot of trouble with that. So the thing I came out of was some freedom about being able to talk more openly about what I was feeling. I'll be honest with you, the anger one is still a tough one. I still struggle with that one.
That makes sense. I remember I was a muscular kid growing up, and I always felt this feeling that if I expressed my anger, I could seriously hurt somebody. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, get in fights with my siblings. I don't like hurting my sister, but I did it sometimes. And every time I just internalized that anger equaled bad. And that's one thing that I think we're missing, especially in our society that we live now, is having men being able to express their emotions. Can you talk a little bit more on that?
Sure. And it's interesting that you say that anger equals bad, because what I translated to, now thinking back to that day when my dad left, that he was expressing his anger and his hurt. Here is this grown man, my dad, who I love very much, who was crying, he was upset. And he was angry. And what I eventually translated that all to is that if you get angry, it means you have to leave. For me, that put a real governor on my emotions. It's like if I express that I'm angry about something to my boss, to my spouse, to my brothers, whatever, that somehow there's going to be a departure, that somehow I'm going to have to leave. You know, we did this thing for 4 years. It was called an integration group. And we did it with people we went through the weekend with. And in my group, I think there was 12 of us, and we met once a week for years. And we went through, allowed men to express how they were feeling and what they needed. And it was incredibly powerful to say, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling hurt. And to have other men sit there and not just acknowledge it, but celebrate it. That was incredibly powerful to me.
So after you went to this warrior group, what changes did you notice in your life?
Well, there were a couple. One was that I was having those conversations, like you said, with my mom, with my dad, was I able to have those conversations. They were tough. There was a conversation later. Again, it was about expressing some anger or displeasure with my mom. And I kept putting the conversation up because she was saying things, doing things that were really causing problems for my young daughters. I think they were probably 10 and 6. And I needed to talk to her because it was really being detrimental to them. And I'll tell you, I put it off and I put it off and I put it off. Yeah, there was just some fear about that. I mean, my mom was a tiny 5'2" woman, very strong. And I would rather spar with my sensei, who was built like a bulldozer, than go and have this conversation. But I had to draw on some of those things I learned in the New Warrior about expressing my emotions and that being a healthy thing, not a bad thing. So eventually I had the conversation. And, you know, that's the thing I realized too. I put off those conversations a lot in my life because there was some fear there that expressing the emotion was bad. And usually when I got to the other side of the conversation, I went, oh, that wasn't so bad. I'm still living. I'm still breathing. No one had to call 911, but they were tough and they are still tough. And the thing I do now is I encourage people to be brave enough to have conversations that really matter. And I have to keep doing that with myself as well.
Mm. Yeah, those conversations can be tough. It's almost like, but it's like ripping off a Band-Aid type thing where it's better to do it quickly because you let those feelings fester and then they can just come out when you're like, let's say, triggered in a way. And then it can just explode on somebody and that never works out.
No, you're right. Rip the Band-Aid off, go for it. And I always try to have those conversations in a way that's respectful both to them and to me. But you're right. You know, you let it simmer too long, it comes out as a blast or it comes out hurtful or get you kind of conversation. And I don't like to have those kinds of conversations.
I don't think anyone really does.
No, I would agree with that.
If they do, those are the type of people you want to stay away from.
Exactly.
So what are some ways to come at one of these conversations? If someone was really trying to start one, how would you start doing that?
One of the things that I have worked on, again, through different experiences that I've had, I had an experience doing a program called Courage to Teach. And one of the things that we did was a process called the Clearness Committee, which is, it goes back to the Quakers from the 1600s. And they talked about having and asking open-ended questions, which I had heard what they were, but I really didn't have a clue about how to use them. We spent 4 weekends over the course of a year practicing asking those open-ended questions and staying behind the person, you know, being willing to follow, not lead in the conversation and be willing to give up the agenda. So it's not necessarily about how to have a confrontational conversation, but it's a way to, it's what I call inviting people to step into your listening. Like if I invite you to step into my listening, but I have an agenda that I have to get across, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work because I'm going to feel like I need to say what I have to say and it doesn't really matter what you have to say and I'm not really listening to you. It's about giving up the agenda and being willing to follow and really practicing asking open-ended questions. I'm amazed at the magic of open-ended questions, truthfully.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing I remember learning in my coaching certification is pretty much to always avoid why questions and making things as open-ended as possible. It's very powerful.
You know, that's interesting too. I didn't really understand the avoid the why questions. I always thought that was another way to get people to explore what they were feeling. I know questions like, how does that make you feel? Or what did you think after that happened? Are strong questions as well. But I throw that why question in there too, because it allows people another avenue to process what they're thinking or feeling.
That makes sense. I think the coaching side of it was a lot of times why questions can be come across as accusatory. Mm-hmm. But I guess it's also how you ask that why question as well.
Right. Sure.
So one thing I noticed is one of your popular programs that you said is creating peak experiences. Can you care to touch on how you got into peak experiences?
It was a really simple thing. I was at a shopping mall in Lansing, Michigan. I was hungry. I walked past a place that was called the greatest hot dog in the world. I'm like, oh, come on. So I walked in. I had this attitude like, you're going to have to prove to me that this is indeed the greatest hot dog in the world. And so I ordered a hot dog. And I said, okay, what makes this the greatest hot dog? How are you going to make that the greatest hot dog? And the guy looked at me. He said, we don't. You do. And I had to go over to this condiment bar and I had to put on anything I wanted on that hot dog. And the choice, there probably had to be 20 choices. And it turned out to be the greatest hot dog in the world. I mean, it was extraordinary. And I started thinking about that later. It was not what they had done, but it was the mindset that they had created that led me to call that a peak experience. It was something that changed my mindset about things. Like, it's how I view it and how I think about it that made that a peak experience. Would I go back there now? I don't even know if it still exists, but it was one of those things. Like I say, it was so simple. What about the mindset that goes into creating something called a peak experience? What I found was all of these little things that could have been passed off as inconsequential or could have been made to give me a feeling of something positive, something upbeat, something that was a peak. And I built a whole program around it. The peak experience program is really about mindset. And it comes from us creating either a negative experience or a positive experience based on the language we use internally. So it's that whole negative self-talk thing, turning that into positive self-encouragement. And the idea is that if you change the language, you change the mindset.
So how has your life changed since you've had these peak experiences and these hard emotional conversations? How does your life look now?
I am much better off in terms of the kinds of things that fill me up, the kinds of things that make me feel fulfilled, make me feel satisfied, come from some of those mindset changes, first of all. Like, I was not aware of how negative my self-talk was until someone pointed that out to me. There was a young Jamaican guy when I was on vacation, and I was trying to windsurf. You know, he kept hearing me talk to myself about how stupid I was and how this is a really dumb idea and how bad I was at handling my finances. And I said those things out loud. He pointed out that, kind of said, as long as your own words make you bleed, he said, you'll never succeed. And that has become my mantra too. It's like really focusing in on the language I was using internally. It was negative. It was bad. At one point I said, gee, I wish I could sing like Josh Groban. And my then wife said, so what's stopping you? And the thing I realized, and the thing I have to keep realizing, Brett, is that it's my internal dialogue that was stopping me. And so if I could change that from a negative self-talk to a positive way of speaking about myself or to myself, has made a tremendous difference. And the other thing is really finding out about people's stories. And that's where those difficult conversations have come from. That's where the Art of Engaged Conversation has come from. It's like, your stories matter. People's stories matter. We all have them. And I'm not just talking about the big stories, the birth of a child, the wedding, the retirement party, the bar mitzvah, whatever it is, because those stories we kind of hear about. But especially in times right now with COVID, people are having stories every day that they're bringing either home to their home environment from work, or they're bringing to their work environment from home. You know, stories about finances, whatever, about struggles with illness, about can we pay the rent, put food on the table. It's made such a difference to me to recognize that if I just take a minute or two or three to validate somebody's story and listen to them, it's going to create a whole new level of trust between the two of us. And I live for those conversations.
Awesome. So what got you wanting to become a professional speaker and actually teach what you teach?
Again, one of those things that was a personal experience from when I was a sophomore in high school. Ninth grade, I was president of the student council at my junior high school. As a sophomore, I was invited to go to this weekend student congress event held in Green Lake, Wisconsin. And there was this man up on stage, and his name was Dr. Earl Room. He's kind of a bigwig in student council circles. And he was entertaining. He was funny. He was captivating. I still remember stories he told. Some were funny. Some were just gut-wrenching. He really, really impacted me. And somehow, like down the road 30 years later, I thought, oh, I really love this idea of motivational speaking, of being in front of groups. You know, I was in front of kids every day as a music teacher. But when I decided to make that decision, when I made that decision about becoming a professional speaker, it dawned on me that it had its genesis in that event with Dr. Earl Room 20 years before that.
So what do you like most about being a professional speaker?
There are several things. One of the things truly is personal, and it's a little bit of the kind of being a rock star kind of thing, where people are sitting there and listening and hopefully enjoying and getting something out of what I'm saying. That spotlight thing, I like that. You know, as a musician, I want the solo. I really like that. The real reason is that if I can in some way be instrumental in helping people make better choices, see where they're stuck and help them get unstuck, lead them to kind of be the catalyst in leading them to their own possibilities, their own transformation. You know, it doesn't come from me. It comes really from them. But I like the idea of being the person who opens the door.
So what does it look like working with you?
I have several programs that I offer, and they all are about creating trust and connection, generally in a workplace setting, in an organization. The idea is that, again, where people are coming with all kinds of things that keep them from being effective at their jobs. Sometimes it's conflicts in the office. Sometimes it's conflicts with the leader of the organization, whether it's a boss, a supervisor, a principal in a school. And we work through a five-part system called The Art of Engaged Conversation that teaches communication skills, that teaches, first of all, creating the understanding about people's stories matter, about the emotions connected to them, and how to invite people into that listening. And then I work on just, there's a whole section on getting people to listen in a different way. A lot of times we think we're listening. A lot of time we have our ears on, but our listening is not turned on. And there are several different ways to listen. Being an active listener, do something I call being a power listener. Again, is inviting people into your listening instead of pushing them away or having them feel like they're not acknowledged. And I work too. There's a fun part of the program is called investigating nonverbal language. You know, the body language, the facial expressions, the hand gestures, the eye contact, when it's important, when it's not, or when it can also stop the conversation. So we look at that. And then I do the Creating Peak Experiences and Beyond piece, because again, that program stands by itself as a mindset program, but it's all about intercommunication and that internal dialogue. And then the last one, which I think is so important, especially with what's going on today, is breaking through bias to have better communication. And that's the whole system. It's called the CLIMB system for the Art of Engaged Conversation.
Cool. Do you have any fun success stories to share?
The place that I created that whole idea about trust and connection was in my classrooms. One of the places that's a struggle, for me was a struggle, was perhaps communicating effectively as a band director. But one of the things I felt that I worked really hard at was being successful in having the kids know that my band room was a safe place, that I was going to acknowledge and validate where they were and take them where they were at, that they could express to me what they were feeling, that I would treat that and want them to come to that place to know that it was a place not only where we're going to make music, but it was going to feel good, it was going to be fun, it was going to be satisfying. And I know from years later, a lot of those students have come back and said those things, that I made it fun, that they felt safe there, that they looked forward to band class. My retirement concert was an indication of that too. I invited people back to come and play on stage with me who were my students 20 years ago or 30 years ago. And we had 75 extra people on the stage, and it was a really wonderful event where I felt like they had received something from me and they were there to gift back to me. And I loved it. It was great.
That sounds like a very fun experience. So we're coming to the end of our time together. One thing I like to ask my guests is do a 1 minute of motivation. You can imagine this as if you are going back in time to your 8-year-old self and you want to convey everything you need to live a happy and joy-filled life. But unfortunately, you only have a minute until you pop back into the future. Or you can think of it as taking your entire life's message and condensing it down to a minute.
The thing I tell people is to be brave enough to have conversations that really matter, that invite people to share their stories with you, that invalidate who they are and where they're at in their journey, that honor their words and their silence. If you want to learn to become a better leader within your community or just become a better human, learn people's stories. And remember that everyone is dying to be heard. Are you listening? Be brave enough to have conversations that really matter. It might improve the relationships in your circles of love and influence, make things go smoother and more efficiently, and simply have people feel acknowledged for the contribution they're making. The truth is, being brave enough to have conversations that matter with people could change their lives. Even more importantly, it might just change yours.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on my podcast. I truly enjoyed listening to your story on how you internalized negative emotions and didn't really get them out. And then going to that Warriors group, which showed you the positive ways you can have hard conversations that can enrich your life and allow you to express your emotions in a positive way to create engaging relationships, and then developing the mindset to help make the entire life a peak experience, and how you can make it so you enjoy your life as your personal choice so that you can make your life. And then going out and spreading this message to other people and spreading more love and passion into this world. So thank you so much for everything that you do, and thank you for coming on my podcast.
Thank you, Brett. It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed talking with you.
May your day be special. And there you have, folks. That is my interview with John Knepper. I enjoyed the way John opened up about his life and about his process. It's always nice when you have podcasts with and interviews with people who are willing to share their personal lives as well as how they got there, in my humble opinion. That just makes people feel more connected. And it makes sense because, you know, John does communication and the art of engaged conversation. And I think he displayed it really well during that interview. I think you could learn a lot about him. And if you want to check him out, if you have concerns about or want to change your workplace culture to one of more positive, connective, and supportive, one that is built on the foundations of trust, and would like to have a conversation with John in a free, qualified trust and connection discovery call, go to his website at www.johnnepper.com and leave a message for him. He will gladly send you a calendar link to set up an appointment for a call in a timely manner. There you have it, folks! That is episode 100 of the Joyous Expansion Podcast. Who'd have thought I made it to there? Woo! Celebration! Good time! Come on! So you can email me at anyreason@bre2t2pr2es@joyousexpansion.com. You can also check me out at joyousexpansion.com, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube @joyousexpansion, Increase Your Joy at Facebook because my SEO game sucks. Thank you so much for listening to the Joyous Expansion Podcast. I love you if you made it this far because you're amazing for who you are. I'm once again Brett Dupree, your Joyous Expansion Life Coach, Catalyst of Transformation for the Church of Awesome, and Champion of Authentic Joy, reminding you once again to be love, to be joy, to be awesome. And now play my jingle.
JoyousExpansion.com. JoyousExpansion.com. Come and say hello to Brett Dupree. He is an inspirational life coach. Good for you and good for me. He turned my life from gray to blue. I'm sure he'll do the same for you. Get in touch and you'll see your life will change dramatically. JoyousExpansion.com. JoyousExpansion.com. Yeah.